Welcome to the Talking Earth. We're going to get started in a moment here. Joe Soldati and Karen Brauker. Folks, am I saying that right? Your name's right?
Yes, you
say
are.
Say something. Get
yes,
closer.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes,
okay,
you
get
are.
Closer there. Okay. We have a message, though. We have a message to play, and there it goes.
The Gilbert and Sullivan Father's Day Special will be Friday, June 23rd, from 11 p.m. to midnight. W.S. Gilbert wrote the words and Sir Arthur Sullivan wrote the music for these satirical Victorian operettas. Tune in if you enjoy British humor, wordplay, twins switched at birth, pirates, and falsified beheadings. Anyone who supports marriages between men and fairies should definitely mark their calendars for Friday, June 23rd, because you won't want to miss the Gilbert and Sullivan Father's Day Special here on KABU.
We've done this 1,000 times. Karen Brauker, say something.
Hi, Walt.
A little louder.
Move your
mic closer. Yeah.
I'm right. There we go. Now
yeah,
I'm
you're
on.
Fine, Karen. No,
yes.
You were afraid I would cut the author of Aqua Curves off the air, and I certainly would not do that. So, author of, gosh, I love that name, Aqua Curves. I can see the green waves sweeping over me, Karen. And Joe Soldati, say something.
Yes, good evening, Walter. Glad to be here.
Call me Walt now, or I won't call you Joseph.
Okay.
By God, we'll get in trouble here to start with. So
either way, Joseph or Joe is fine.
Okay. Well, the needles are acting perfect, and everything is on target. So, Joe and Karen, we're going to celebrate to begin with Soldati's new book, Apocalypse Clam. I have a hard time saying that, Joe. And, you know, in a way, we might begin there, but you are a friend of William Stafford. You are on the Board of Trustees, and you are an English teacher at Western Oregon University. I got that wrong.
Well, formerly, I'm retired now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
What book is this? You said this was your fourth book.
This is my fourth book overall, yes.
And you had...
I have a scholarly book and two volumes of poetry, and I'm editor of another volume.
Yeah, I don't know. Actually, I'm not hearing you very well either. I wonder if this monitor is... there we go. Well, Joe, what the heck is an apocalypse clam, and why don't you begin with that?
Well, yes, let me read the title.
I
want
to know about what an apocalypse clam is. It sounds
well,
weird.
Well, this actually comes from a newspaper article. I believe it was by, what's the man's name, Monroe, for the Oregonian, the outdoor writer.
Oh, yeah, he's the outdoor writer, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I'm neither a fisherman nor a hunter. Well, I fish, but no one would call me a fisherman. And he wrote an article a long while back about this clam called the purple varnish clam that's moving into the Northwest from Canada all the way down to California. And so it was the gist of this poem.
One of these invasive species that's happening all
exactly.
over the planet.
Exactly. But this is an edible invasive species. Anyway, at least you can eat it. Okay. Anyway, let me read the poem.
you're off to a good start. Okay.
Yeah. Apocalypse clam. We can feel them beneath our feet. Little tremors and undulations underground that measure 0.05 to 0.09 on the Richter, as far away as Salt Lake City, Laramie, Denver, Sacramento, and cause the tsunami siren at Hilo to emit a feeble moan. Relentless to a fault, purple varnish clams undermine beachfronts north to south, this pseudopodia kicking sand in the face of the sea. The shore will slip away, and we will have no coastline to lie on, only cliffs from which to look down upon. To save the West Coast, all of Washington, Oregon, and California will soon be marshaled to go clamming. Whole populations booted and beshoveled, tramping to the high water mark, from where we all began, the sea at our backs, digging in.
Digging in. You know, indigenous people clams were really, a great source of food. So I don't know. It's a good idea.
Yes, and of course we started this from the ocean, and that's the whole point of the last line is we've ended up where we began.
Right.
I like
digging into the shore.
I like this book a lot. I think somebody's trying to call in, but we're not going to answer the phone here tonight. So they're in trouble. They're in deep trouble.
They're
Joe.
Probably saying, "Get off!
Well,
get away!"
You just every several years you go to Italy, don't you? And so you just returned.
Yes, I did.
And you're going to read us not right yet, but you're going to read us. You've got a poem about Fellini in here. You've got a poem on the death of Shelley, which was one of the great tragedies of the 19th century, the wonderful liberationist, young, romantic firebrand poet who couldn't swim but drowned in his sailboat off the coast of Italy. But what one would you like? And then you've got Quo Vadis, Debbie. What should we do?
Oh, and we all want to hear that one.
Where do you want to go, Joe?
Let me read Addio Federico.
Oh, yeah, I love
which
that.
Which is really not about Fellini, but it's really about my family in Italy.
Ah.
Well, how is that? Explain that. I mean, it's in the poem, I'm sure, but people need to know that Federico Fellini wrote
the great movie director who died.
Satyricon. Yeah. He wrote the strong. What was it called? The La Strada. Give me some more. Some of the other great.
Well, let's see. Well, all those. Well, that Juliet of the Spirits.
Juliet of the Spirits. The Roma. What with the women of Rome? What was God, he's one of the greatest directors.
He's got the clowns. He's got you said the Satyricon, the Satyricon.
Mm. Right, right.
Wouldn't you call him a surrealist? Surrealistic.
Well, I suppose, but he wrote that. You know, the other great film is Italy or Italia.
Uh-huh. I love his.
Just one of the great filmmakers of our time, and he died in 1993. And the poem is ostensibly called Addio, or Goodbye, Federico. Your movies were everywhere in my youth, in art film theaters and on college campuses, at film festivals in cities we could not afford to go to. Roma made me want to take up motorcycling. Huge Harley between my thighs, no muffler, a 550cc pilgrim hurling along the Appian Way. Instead, I took up eating, Italy's second greatest art after cooking, and every year go to Piazza Santa Maria in Trastevere.
Oh.
Saluti, saluti, saluti. Carafes of vino rosso, piatti of mussels in spaghettini. I once saw you posing as a conduttore on a bus from Parma to Moncio delle Corte. You wore a gray uniform and punched tickets as if in a cinema, an usher at your own film, Italia. L'Americano, you called me, and we talked as the bus rolled up the mountain roads. I was going to Vichatica, birth, love, marriage village of my grandparents, Arturo and Gemma, up the same roads they had come down in 1912 on the way to Italian named America. Vichatica, where I met for the first time Fortunata, Evadia, Giacomo, Ivana, Arnaldo, Ornella, Giovanna, Daniela, Anna Maria, names as musical as the streams that pour from the mountains. This was in autumn, not so long ago, in Emilia-Romagna, warm under leftover sun from summer, where hams hung on hooks in Longhirano, and the countryside smelled of prosciutto and parmigiano, dry leaves and memory.
Mm. Damn it, Joe, you're making me hungry. How do you say Joe in Italian? I should know.
Giuseppe.
Giuseppe.
Can we call you Giuseppe?
Si, mi chiamo Giuseppe.
Well, Karen, are you gonna finesse your way into this now?
If you'll let me, I think we're on a food thing. If that's all right, I'm gonna read a food.
Well, your bouillabaisse. Oh, is that his bouillabaisse? Oh, no.
Well,
I
was gonna read Cajun shrimp bacchanal.
Oh, let's do it. Let's do it. Food.
Okay.
I'm getting hungry. I had a cookie for dinner, and go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't bring you.
No.
I had pasta.
You know, we sort of have a humor thing going, and the seafood, is it those clams? We're going to put the clams in my shrimp dish, whatever. Okay.
Karen Buck.
Right, from Aqua Curves, Cajun shrimp bacchanal. And this is also a recipe. One, the shrimp. 2 dozen large shrimp. We're going to mainline you. No salad on the side, no rice on the side. Just you, crescents of pink flesh, plump half moons. Just you, dressed up and ready to be taken to bed, to be devoured, to be enjoyed completely. Ocean ambrosia, we are impressed by your jumbo size and flesh. 2. The seasonings. Ground red pepper, ground black pepper, salt, crushed red pepper, thyme, rosemary, oregano. You have that flair, that je ne sais quoi. How do you make it look so professional? A man at the stove turns me feminine, effusive. It occurs to me, men must be made to stand at stoves. If the biological imperative, all this hot stuff excites, my feet dance on the tiles, my arms wrap around your flannel waist, my fingers run down, down, down your denim legs. 3. The sauce. 1 stick plus 5 tablespoons unsalted butter. 1½ teaspoons minced garlic. 1 teaspoon Worcestershire sauce. 1/2 cup shrimp stock. 1/4 cup beer, room temperature. An expert male is unbelievably sexual. An expert female is often one who doesn't look like an expert. These facts of life are hard to take, except when your man is a gourmet chef. All is forgiven. Just give me those juicy, buttery, spicy shrimp. Drop them one by one down my throat between long, cool sips of bottled beer. Ah, chef, to have a chef, to love the chef. 4. How to do it. Combine seasonings in small bowl. Combine 1 stick butter, garlic, Worcestershire seasonings. Mix in large skillet over high heat. When butter is melted, add shrimp. Cook 2 minutes. Shaking pan. Add 5 tablespoons butter and stock. Cook and shake pan 2 minutes. Add beer. Cook and shake 1 minute. This is Louisiana food, bold, adventurous, makes your head sweat, your heart pound. Zydeco music, crazy accordion, singers raging, accompanies our feasting. Your jeans are so soft, I run my wet hands down them. Ah, chef, to have a chef, to love the chef. Finishing your shrimp, you perform the benediction. Cajun food is such succulent poison.
Oh, Karen.
You're trying to scare
I just had to say that for Walt.
She's trying to scare the crap out of me. No. Castration complexes, shrimp,
what?
Buttery shrimp, eat the shrimp.
Oh, for heaven's sake. No.
Is it a put on? Okay, Karen, come on. No, I'm a tough guy, you know so... you have a kind of Anne Sexton silver
school. Oh, it's my poetry. Voice or something.
Yeah,
no, that actually is published
Louisiana?
In a Nervy Girl. And,
oh, Nervy Girl. No
yeah. Right here in Portland.
I understand that.
Yeah.
That.
Joe,
I thought it was a very sexy poem.
Would a good Italian boy hang out with a woman that's that bloody hungry?
Well, I'm always glad to hang out with Karen.
You guys have known each other for a while, haven't you?
A few years.
Three or four years. Friends of William Stafford and have seen him at various events. One reason I'm very happy about Joseph Soldati's book Apocalypse Clam, which just came out. I know that's quite a mouthful. Is that twice it was a finalist for my small chapbook press competition?
Yep.
Yeah, but just that he It's so hard to get public. People don't realize that. And so it's just great. And I feel vindicated because, you know, it's a great collection and come out. I love the cross-cultural element that it's got the Italian. It also has a sense of humor. We're he likes food, new, too.
Well, we were talking on the phone. Poets and poetry once in a while had a little verbal playfulness, wit, and even humor. God forbid, even humor.
Well,
these serious times,
yes.
And the Bush Rumsfeld Cheney crowd is sweeping us to oblivion. We still are able to laugh our way to the graveyard.
I think poetry is important. I think poetry is important, especially when the poet can kind of laugh at himself or herself.
And even make fun of himself.
Let me read this little poem. When I was about 12 years old, coming into puberty, the movie, many of you know, Quo Vadis, came to Charlotte, North Carolina, where I lived. And just by chance, and fortunate chance, it showed at the Imperial Theater.
Mm-hmm. And, was it? Help me.
In Charlotte, North Carolina.
Charlotte, North Carolina.
He's right.
Well, Carolina is great, too.
And this poem is called Quo Vadis. I reached puberty the same year the pagans tied Deborah Carr to the stake in the Colosseum.
Oh, my God.
Before all of whom, but for my eye only, she wore virgin's blue summer gown that I swore for years I saw through. The white, perfectly bitty breast, recently Christianized, about to be martyred in my memory. The bull leered at her and slaughtered. The mob jeered at her and cheered the bull. Together quivered against the sake. A bee sneaked up the Tiber, turning the gown into a blue cloud, exposing the known world's most wonderful thighs. Pax Romana, conversion and salvation at hand. My melted junior mint fell to the floor.
Oh, my God, Joseph. Remember, this is not an X-rated
an innocent boy.
Okay, it was innocent. There's no doubt about it. But you're an Italian boy. This is an Italian film set in Rome.
Yeah, well, more. Actually, it's an American film set in Rome.
Dear Carter, though, I always felt I was a little prissy later on. I don't know, but maybe for a kid. I was thinking.
Hey, I was 12 years old, Walt.
Okay.
I wasn't a film critic then.
No, let's. With Pia Loren.
Yes,
she had the boomers or whatever.
She will make you lay your eyes down.
Fantastic.
Even days.
Pia Loren. She's still around, I hope. Guy left.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, the Italian film, and then a great Anna with Ani, and I'll never forget with Marlon Brando and Fugitive Kind. You know, Anna Magnani is not like Sophie Loren, but we're going too far back in time for the
kids. We're getting off track here. Aaron, give us another one.
Well, I'm on the humor track, so I'm going to read this.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to I'm to homework on you.
Uh-oh.
But go ahead.
If you Google me, you're really.
Yeah, I'm
going to
Google.
Well, actually, I do have a website. I'll mention that.
Go ahead.
KarenBrowker.com, and it does have some homes on it. So
I wonder if Google is like Oogle.
Yeah, right. Or Oogle, yeah, right. Okay, well, listen. I've been married forever. I've been married.
Oh, yes, when he drove you up.
Yeah. He's a sweetie. And this goes out to Roger. And I've been married 29 years.
Oh, you're not to anyone then.
Oh, thanks so much, Walt. And I loved you before this evening.
I know. What happens?
This is called How to Stay Married.
Okay.
The perfect marriage is, they say, a blind woman married to a deaf man. Or is a deaf woman married to a blind man? Failing to achieve these physical variations, it is helpful to have marriage ocean waves, swelling, breaking, sucking, for pounding and returning. With what authority do I speak? My dossierless cutting von brioche. 29 years with the same man, not 1 year all voluptuous or all gritty. Doesn't marriage flow in and around two people? Observe tranquil ripples, later choppy whitecaps. Also, gale force winds with tempestuous seas, detritus from yachts, pollution from toxic dumps. Learn to float. Practice subterfuges. Expect repetition. All step-by-step guidebooks are an insult. You be lucky or slow-witted. You must want a shared history of beds, a trousseau of disguises, a growing knowledge of diplomatic strategies. You must buy earplugs or hourglasses or fun hats. After a while, you must be a boat or parts of a boat. Yesterday, the rusty scupper. Today, gunnels. Tomorrow, bass and bailing buckets. You must be a motor, a sail, a pedal. It's helpful to enjoy the view. It's helpful not to think about lack of life preservers.
life preservers.
Well, I've never been married.
We never been out alive. You get out of this life.
Joe, you're married. You're married, aren't you?
I have been married, not me.
Oh, well. Now, I want to just Katrinka note. In this book, your book, Aqua Curves, Karen Brooker, Katrinka von Brioche. Is that a made-up persona?
It's just made up. Yeah, well, a lot of made-up persona.
Tell us about that. No, you bring different voices to it. You put a notation in here about make-up voices. You realize, yeah, I move, say, some of the puzzles are not autographical. Glenn Miller, Andrew Yoda, that's the obvious. Based up to
the mermaids.
I make up them soon.
That's a sexy poem. Want to read that?
I make up epigrams for any of my own poems.
Yeah.
Do you ever find anywhere else that...
Okay, give us. You know, I want to.
There are a lot of persona poems.
It's a very rich book. Yeah. I think it's really. It's a feat of language, and there's this wonderful adjectives and.
What you asked me? What
is Saudi Arabian letters? Is that another one?
Sure. Well, I think it's kind of long.
Well, let's hold on with that.
Yeah.
Do it short one, then we'll go. What about.
What did I read?
Are you based? Well, no. What do you want to read?
So much food. Yeah. We're just going to end seafood it out.
I'm across the room.
I have to say that.
No, I know it's a little quickly tonight, but okay.
I think I'll read Baudelaire's Siren.
Go ahead. Go ahead. But you know Baudelaire.
Oh, yeah. You know, he's very. Very famous French poet who wrote Les Fleurs du Mal,
okay,
Flowers of Evil, right? And basically, folks, he was the Mick Jagger of mid-1800s Paris. He was an incredibly controversial, crazy man, and they didn't have rock stars back then, it was 1800s.
But, translated Edgar Allan Poe.
And he loved Poe, and he also had a mistress who was described as, I believe, a quadroon, which meant that she was a queer African.
To do these and, really rich,
right.
So,
but anyway, she was part African, and she was always leading him, and she was his siren. So, I will read this. Baudelaire's Siren. She's naked, except her jewels, of course. Oh, and I should say, wait, there's one note.
What
the hell
is siren for those who are...
Oh, what's a siren? A siren is...
The mouth of the river.
Exactly. In the mythic sense, a siren was made a man jump into
right, a siren
the water.
Was a male figure.
But a siren is often a muse.
A vamp. Yeah.
Right. But this is someone who brings out a man's inner self, too. And
to lead to
his
destruction,
sexual
though. There's
being.
A connotation of
often.
Destruction in siren, isn't there? I think, yeah.
Well, that's true in the Odyssey when the Deus.
There's sexual irons. Like, they talk about Roe being a siren, too.
Okay.
So, but brief passage in Texas is from the Jewels, Charles Baudelaire, the Jewels, and his lover's name was Jean Duval, Baudelaire's siren, except for her jewels, of course. Two goblets reflect candles, her brown skin, brocade draped from their bed, her naked undulations. Later, Charles draws away from her. He's a hard, salty cracker after tastes of sweet chutney. He thinks she's more luscious than trees trembling in rain, most cruel of women in her seduction. This is before long letters are exchanged, articulating their hatred, their love, acrid, sweet as hashish, stultifying as opium. Jean knows it's time to pack her carpet bag, disappear into Paris. She covers his eyes from behind, pressing against him. You're going to remember me always, she whispers. She's about to tell him the truth when he groans, wraps his arms round her, rolls her again on the bed. In his head, her arms and legs, her reins and her thighs, spices. That's from Baudelaire. She will leave often, threaten never to return. He'll lament her nature, his used-up money. But being lost can lead to such celebration. Squeaky springs make them laugh, moan, while bedposts murmur, "Give up! Give up!" And now I'll turn it to Joe. It's Joe's turn after that.
I'd like to go back to a recipe.
Wow.
But this is not a recipe for something to eat. And this poem is not in the book. But this is a true story, actually. And many of you remember this. And the poem is called How to Make a Movie in Portland, Oregon.
Uh-oh. I've been involved with several, so yeah.
Oh.
Begin filming in summer. Warm, dry, beautiful weather. Waterfront park. The trees resplendent with green leaves against a high blue sky. Closed park. Roll him. For scenes with Max, a streetcar, use Hawthorne Bridge, which has no tracks. Alter city bus to resemble streetcar. Close Hawthorne Bridge. Attach moss to north side of Gleason Street ramp of Steel Bridge, where the Max tracks are. Rake up vagrant's trash, bottles, papers, old shoes, etc. Strew set with Hollywood trash, bottles, paper, old shoes, etc. Then star actor breaks arm. Strike moss from Gleason Street ramp. Pack up clag lights and other odd paraphernalia. Return to Hollywood. When star heals, return to Portland in January. Daily rain, cold, and colder when not raining. Attach artificial green leaves to trees in Waterfront Park. Pretend it's summer. Don't think about the vapors of actors' breaths sewing on film. Close park. Shoot scene. Detach leaves from trees. Later, set off explosions in North Portland, scaring the hell out of residents who fear terrorist attacks have begun. On one of the darkest days of the winter, reattach moss to Gleason Street ramp. Add new garbage. Shoot scene. Strike moss, strike garbage. Put film in waterproof can.
Wow.
Was that called The Hunters? What was that called? Something
it's called How to Make a Movie in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, but that was
such
you,
a Portland
you were following
movie.
In the papers, Portland. So you were following in the papers, weren't you? The one that yeah.
And watching it happen.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, yes.
Right.
And when they were making that film with
yeah, what's
Jones? What's his name?
Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Now, listen, Karen, you brought up the. We're going to interrupt here. We don't have the Vatican rag, but we're going to do the masochist tango for a minute here. So we promised we would like...
We're doing humor tonight,
yeah,
I bet.
Let our love be a flame, not an ember. Say it's for me that you want to dismember. Blacken my eye, set fire to my ties. Dance to the masochism tango.
Come along.
I love you, Walt.
At your command, before you here I stand. My heart is in my hand.
I love Tom Lehrer.
They don't do it anymore.
I know.
A little more and a little more.
It's here that I must be. My heart entreats. Just hear those savage beats. And go put on your cleats. And come and trample me. Heart is hard as stone or mahogany. That's why I'm in such exquisite agony. My soul is on
Rhymes.
Fire. It's aflame with desire, which is why I perspire when we tango. You caught my nose in your left castanet, love. I can feel the pain yet, love. Every time I hear drums, and I envy the rose that you held in your teeth, love, with the thorns underneath, love, sticking into your gums.
Okay, he's too much. He gets carried away.
I haven't heard that in 30 years.
Yeah, I haven't either.
It's so great.
Well,
go I love Tom Lehrer.
What happened? I mean, he used to make fun of everyone and everything.
Yeah.
Though. He was a bit sadistic, a little weird, but, you know. No, yeah, all he did was play the piano just dramatically and sing. Yeah,
yeah.
Tom Lehrer. L-E-H-R-E-R. So for you young'uns out there, you don't remember Tom Lehrer. But yeah, you I couldn't find the Vatican rag. And he does this thing.
Oh, we love the Vatican rag.
Genuflect. Yeah. Well, all you Catholics.
First you get down on your knees. Twiddle with your rosaries. Bow your head in great respect. And genuflect.
Oh, God.
I grew up on that because I grew up in the Boston area, and I think he was
totally
in
Catholic.
I think he was a math professor. I think he was an MIT math professor.
Oh, and he got so upset at this Russian who plagiarized some of his work. Yes,
oh, he did?
Yes,
oh,
he,
I didn't know
he
that.
He wrote a whole song about the guy stealing and stuff. But so you grew up in the
Boston. He was a poet in a way. He was a troubadour, and it's, you know that it's
of course
rhyming.
I think of look at him more as a satirist.
Well, yeah, but a
But he did.
Yeah. Satirist.
But he, and a pretension balloon bust.
He was a balloon buster.
Right. Well, we like that.
Well, bust us a balloon here, either Joe or Karen.
Well, I'm going to.
Okay, she's going to.
But it's kind of a switch in tone.
Oh, it's all right. It's all right. We can
well, that's always good after you laugh a little. This one kind of, it's interesting because sometimes I think of America as sort of like a valley girl. Now, another way of thinking of America is, of course, like a G.I. Joe, kind of, you know, a guy who's kind of a bumbling, carrying a gun and walking through the world. But another way is sort of very girlish quality. And this was written after 9/11 and actually came out of a writing exercise. I mean, it's pretty hard to write about 9/11. And
particularly
basically,
if you believe it's a conspiracy like I do.
Well, yeah. I mean, what did happen? But this doesn't actually take a political stance, I don't think, but heavily take it from a newspaper, lines out of the newspaper, and we're struck together. So it's a reflect trauma of autumn in the news century. And remember, that was the beginning of the 21st century. It was like, well, oh my gosh, it's going to be long. And it is autumn in the new century. With still high heels, torch of a liner in shades of pale mustard, comfortable clasps, cheese and heads of unusual lettuce, tattoos who seal you and celebrant tribalism. Everyone wanted shorter commute. Instead, on a dash, soot, disfigured, falling head over heels, the entrepreneurial economy insisted animation came with flashy rolls, empty airports. It came with wailing, no one would invest in a kite factory. Autumn came wrenched with twisted buildings, body parts, lots of gas masks, flat-heeled boots for aviation, pantsuits for all under anger and caution. It came with ICs for streaming, wearing videos of thousands of funerals, donating blood to the cross. Was new this occasion, infants and many flags.
Many flags.
Many flags.
And they won't show the cons, but they'll show flags. Well, let you go. I can one more, but I'm a helper at Wasps.
Right? Okay. Yeah.
He said something important. I really like that a lot. But Joe, look, ready to read the one they call Slick and the Buckers at Starbucks.
Oh.
Those one poems. I got pictures.
I've got here.
Oh, so the Wasps are on page 27. So why did I like this poem so much? I liked it because my... Where did you see what?
It started out of, you know, sex. And they are really, so we did have a nice amount.
They come out, they come out, they, you know.
And if you come out, it's scary, but in the, so the poem, I realize we're very much,
we're just
very much like sex.
We're asking on the mind of digging, right?
People,
and,
oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, very much. Like, you know, really, I was fascinated when I read this one, houses came up to me towards this way, I felt was solid. He said, I love that poem, and even sex and stuff. So, you know, sort of go out to people who actually maybe enjoy watching insects for me, they make my skin crawl, but pops. Not only the resting, your body bulbous, hovering obscene, I loathe, and your angry buzz, like lawyers arguing. You're excited with creation, nestuck eaves, and insect makes a verdict. Who could say humans are dissimilar with our hot and traffic warrants skirting up at home, alive with crawling bodies, like cars of Ecuador, bottles of Calcutta, stock exchanges, parliament. Or perhaps you are monks groaning a spiritual solo in your world, everywhere being sin or self-impotent.
It's a very long one, and it's some. Joe, going back to your book, and you're going to read from the South Side when we from Pop Club.
Yes, you wanted to hear.
No,
I'm reading the whole thing this Thursday evening, 7 o'clock in the store.
Glass bookstore,
yes.
Thursday, and
yes.
Who is your... And your
Don Colburn, who is on the... Actually, he first played Ward Finning Line S, which is also...
Okay,
so we're...
FinningPress.com. Okay.
And yes, and I mentioned the website also. Joseph Fatty come www. Right. It has a link with her, and as a matter.
Oh, I have to get on there.
To go with it.
Yeah.
Well, just two people poems. People, is that?
Yes, they are. The one called Slick. I live downtown, as you do, I believe. Do you know?
Yeah, sort of in the east.
I live in Central City, so the public transportation. And I think one of the things that distinguishes boys from everyone else is that we not only watch, but see what implies it in some way. Mm-hmm. And we then, unless sick things offered up, jewel in his nose, earlobes tat in black, just the other Christ, added tattoos on his arms, clean upside down crucifix that's live biceps, ready for Achilles' catastrophe. Easy to crawl line. Few most contrast white scalp, a new shaved head, and old tonsure. And I can smell cooking oil, Big Mac, his shirt. Turtles run of the train, keep calling him, sit with them. Slick, slick, slick. His utterance slide thickly, invitingly, from scarlet lip up hell. But Slick, cool, shoes on a toothpick, keeps his head down. Then, as the train the grade next to the park along her, he gives it the trees early bloom. Wish I see through his eyes.
It's a sensitive, but the Kirby.
Well, he's to the poet, or he might not be. You just die.
You have a motorcycle?
No, I'm not. Oh, I'm not, a, not an announcer. I'm a coward.
I don't believe that.
You see these big guy.
Okay. Oh, yeah, a lot of them.
I know, Mark. If we're a gay bar, you'd be called her.
Is that right?
Oh, is that it?
I mean, poem for books. Okay. Yeah. Well, tell us about
this. This is a dedicate this to my friend Linda, who's also dedicated to
right.
The book. And she and I were out there at a couple years old.
I know that is.
And they're bakers for books. And she said, you are the best. And by golly, I had even bet sometimes people work as their muse.
Right.
Bikes at Starbucks, like Nelson's chairs, that their unkept ears and combed ponytails are as authentic as the earreds are dresses in boots. Posted off their leather jackets, reveal arms gilt blind with tattoos, drinking double dyed calf mocha lattes. When summer comes, will they switch to frappuccinos, lick the frosted foam from straws, and sigh yuppily in the sun? A genuine Hell's Angel wouldn't even off his helmet, would order up of unguamala, tooth bean, bit the leavings on sidewalk, hang in the rear pocket of his mama jeans, while his huge hog gets buttered on some sidewalk, then pass by like a ravenous beast. Stark sun buyers a line bite like icons on a sea salt for a curb. We thrill at chrome in the bright scuffles, the scarlet blues, yellow purples, more radiant than the tops on temple, Miss Art and Vision. And we spent bossing and polishing every part and pay for adoration. Yeah. Still, the shining disease, Yamaha's disease, entices us to pleasures beyond those complacencies of the noir and the young Sunday morning with its afternoon. When the bikers start their engines all roar from a sound softened and hardened wind, defile up riving you like a great egg dragon breathing iron giants. Free from a Sunday of whatever responsibilities got us no closer to God than we were last night. Into a paradise of metallic skies with clouds the color of steamed cream atop a cappuccino.
Well, a nice poem.
That's a wonderful poem.
Isn't it a wonderful poem?
Yeah. It's not just, it's both humor and you know, humorous and serious.
Well, the animal wants to get a machine, you know, somewhere right. Into this idealized, you know, mechanized, free. Or something, but I don't know. I'm worried that technology thing is down, but anyway, to our knees.
I would never have had a motorcycle, but I think they're beautiful to look at. I feel that way on a lot of machines, and racing car, I'm not racing car fan, but racing cars and
you know, it's your
motorcycles.
Italian blood. Before Mussolini, you know, they believe technology, yeah, we lead in, you know, some kind of apotheosis, God, and that, you know, future, they really believe in industry and technology. It's a scary thing, but. Well, so what did you teach in college? And you get ready now, Karen. You're getting ready.
Oh, really?
Well, I teach at a small college like Western.
Well, what did you teach?
I taught everything from everything. As I was literature. That's one of the nice things about a small college.
And a lot of it was a teacher's college.
You get to
college.
Teach everything.
Yeah, it was a teacher's college. I mean, you're trying to general.
At one time, it was OCE Oregon. Then it had a liberal arts component and had several schools, a business school, a liberal arts school, education school.
Do you remember Tom Ferté? And
Yes, Tom and I are good.
Yeah. Tom retired, but he actually was the leading possibly poet and English instructor there, and they brought out the Kalapuya Review, which I don't think happens anymore. Do you remember the Kalapuya Review?
Kalapuya is now called Basalt, and it's now at Eastern Oregon.
Or Southern Oregon or Eastern Oregon.
And I was associate poetry editor
for the Kalapuya
Tom, and Tom was the editor-in-chief of the, of the old Kalapuya Collage.
Well, I remember that, yeah. Yeah, the Kalapuya, excuse me.
We
Kalapuya
published
Collage.
Some of your stuff, if I remember.
Maybe or maybe not.
Oh, I think, I'm sure we did.
Oh,
I could go back.
I always wonder why I don't get published, but you know, to help me.
we published some of your poems.
Poetry magazines are little cliques, you know, I love it.
No, yeah,
I,
they
I,
are.
Tom Fiddle had that wonderful head, hot like
No, he still lives in Salem.
Oh, he does?
He turns to talk with the
lowest. A lot of posts he did.
Oh, yes. He had won the Stuart Brook Award 1 year ago for his service.
Good man. The Kalapuya Collage. I knew I'd drink from my feeble-minded past. We have about 10 minutes. Karen Barker and my guest also, Joseph Soldate. This is fun. Yeah, I like the contrast of the male and female voice, and we're not being too wild here. Where do you want to go, dear?
No, we've gotten here. Positively sedate.
Sedate. Not with your laugh. No. I love your vivacious. I think
that's a word I do not associate with you, Karen.
I think you're just vivacious as the Dickens, and I'm ready for it. So
just great.
We without wit and the dance, the masochistic thing that all poets and lovers. And
would you mind if I read a formal poem? I was thinking of reading my one.
What is a formal poem?
Wow, my one villanelle. I'll probably never write one again. It actually rhymes.
Help them. Repeat a villanelle repeats this thing.
I can't even tell you all the. I have a book, you know, that has poetic forms, but basically you've got rhymes that lines that have to rhyme over
to
and
again
over
and again.
No. Yeah, it's A B A and then A B A. Yeah. All that
French
stuff.
Okay.
You're right. Well, you asked.
No, To Kiss Again and Again is my poem from my book. You've got my book open.
So that's all right. This is called Learning to Play Violin at 45. And I did learn to play violin at 45.
You should have brought it in here, kiddo. Wow. Okay.
Her father's soft ghost has begun to play a Bach minuet with confidence, grace. His battered violin now fills her days with formal practice, festive matinees of acting lofty, no alcohol trace. Her father's soft ghost has begun to play arpeggios of roses, fluid clay, messy finger paints, lavish paper lace, his battered violins lifting her haze. Her stiff pater pushed his music away with drudging and liquor, a frenzied pace. Her father's soft ghost has begun to play mellifluous songs for swinging soirees. She hosts to crack his ridged carapace, blasts the Marseillaise in white negligee. Though she never heard or saw him play, imagine his enraptured face, her father's soft ghost. She's begun to play. His battered violin now fills her days.
Lovely, lovely.
Thanks.
That's wonderful.
You read beautifully.
It's a fine villanelle, I think.
Oh, thank you. It doesn't come naturally. I think I did the first draft at 3 a.m., you know, one of those things where you're just driven to do.
Karen, we'll do one more, and then we'll go to Joe for 1 or 2, and then we'll have
maybe
to be done.
Maybe this will be my last.
You like Recovered Memory 14?
Sure, something that's on the
lighter.
It's
a lyrical poem. I like it, and it brings up Aqua Curves.
One thing I haven't brought. There's lots of mermaids in here. I'm a swimmer, but this one actually came about because Paul Ann Peterson said to me, "You should write a recovered memory poem about how you were a mermaid." So you know, it's like you with Linda saying, "Write about the bikers." It was Paul Ann basically just out of the blue said, "Write about this." So I did. recovered memory. And, you know, your recovered memory is much better than most recovered memories, which are about, you know, axe murderers and terrible things in your childhood. This is like a lovely, lovely thing. And in German folklore, a woman was considered a mermaid if her apron was wet. Recovered memory. At the time I was reclining on Dr. Freud's couch, a vision of loveliness, and I realized I was not telling him a dream, but of my former life among coral reefs, caverns. I could again see flocks of gaily colored fish flying through turquoise waters. It was real, I cried out, shaking the plush sofa. The hem of my apron was dripping wet. Let us not get agitated, Fräulein. You remember your hysteria last week, my dear, said the solemn doctor, sucking on his pipe, furiously writing. Yes, Herr Doctor, I whispered. But inside I was not meek. I was a sea nymph again, mating with a mortal man, and thus acquiring my soul. And that was from the mermaid legend. Some of them, that's the mermaids mated with men to acquire a soul. Some of these stories are amazing.
Karen, you belong in the theatrical business. You're
oh,
a vivacious
thanks.
Actress. That was wonderful. And that's a beautiful poem, too. I love mytho poems. Joe, we have about, how do you want to end it?
I think I'll end it from the clown because Karen.
He's going to read Italian.
Karen said she would not let me out of here without pain if I didn't read it. Something in Italian.
Oh,
let me read
lovely.
It in English first, and then I will read it in Italian.
Bravo. Bravissimo.
From the
Thank
clown.
You.
If I were a mouse, I would eat only chocolate. Then your lips would always want mine. If I were a pilgrim, I would venerate your statue. Then steal it if I were a thief. If I were a hand, I would caress your skin. Then dress you all in fine silk. If I were a cloud, I would hover over you, but never block out the moon or the sun. And would you laugh if I played the clown, if I put on the yellow shoes and red nose? If I were a clown, I would dance with you in the center ring of the largest circus, where elephants play violins and lions sing love songs. Dal Pagliaccio. Se fossi una bocca, mangerei cioccolato solo, così che le tue labbra vorrebbero sempre le mie. Se fossi un pellegrino, tua statua venerei, poi la ruberei se fossi un ladro. Se fossi un mano, accarezzerei la tua pelle, allora ti vestirei tutte nelle sette fini. Se fossi una nuvola, mi starei sopra di te, ma non bloccherei né la luna o il sole. E rideresti se facesi il pagliaccio, se vestissi con le scarpe gialle e il naso rosso, se fossi un pagliaccio, ballerei con te nel cerchio centrale, del circo più grande, dove gli elefanti toccano i violini ed i canti d'amore cantano i leoni.
Oh, that was beautiful.
That's for you, Gary.
Oh, thank you, Joseph Soldati.
Joseph Soldati reading from Apocalypse Clam Thursday night. Where at Broadway Books?
No, that's at Looking Glass Bookstore Thursday night.
And Karen Brocker reading from Aqua Fresh, and we're going to go out with...
It's always seemed to me that this is precisely the sort of dynamic, positive thinking.
That's fun.
Karen and Joseph,
we so desperately need today.
Thank you,
Walt.
In these trying times
thank you,
of crisis
and, thank you,
and
Karen.
Universal brouhaha. And so with this in mind, I have here a modern, positive, dynamic, uplifting song in the tradition of the great old revival hymns. This one might more accurately be termed a survival hymn. It goes like this.
Hey.
When you attend the funeral, it is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. Oh, what a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go. All suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. Oh, we will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. Down by the old maelstrom, there'll be a storm before the calm, and we will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake with complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. Oh, we will all char together when we char, and let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a tedium when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are. When we burn, there'll be no need to stand and wait your turn. When it's time for the fallout and St. Peter calls us all out, we'll just drop our agendas and adjourn. You will all go directly to your respective Valhallas. Go directly, do not pass, go, do not collect $200. Every Hottentot and every Eskimo, when the air becomes Uranus, we will all go simultaneous. Yes, we all will go together when we all go together. Yes, we all will go together when we go.